Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester. This is round two. Hopefully, during this round, my child will not again take out the power plug that goes to the router, and we don't lose it 20 minutes in.
What?
Today's cast, we're doing a dive into the events of the Nephilim War, which later became known as the Pariah Crusade, a.k.a. the start of 9th edition.
Kind of where I wanted to start talking about things almost immediately after the Horus Heresy, and I got put in timeout.
Yeah. Yeah, Brad's pitch was, we finished the Horus Heresy, so the oldest, well, not the oldest, but some of the oldest parts of the Lord said, can we do the new stuff now? Like, well, it involves entirety of characters who no one's ever heard of. Yeah, they'll figure it out.
Can we do the new stuff now? I don't understand what's happening here.
Yeah, I'm not following all your complaints. So that's what today's going to be. The 40K Lorecast is a weekly show in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. If you like the cast, please follow and comment on it. It really helps push our algorithm out, which has really grown our listener base. We're actually a lot larger than I ever imagined in a million years we would be at from a listener base. And that's because the Spotify and iTunes, et cetera, algorithms like us a lot because of how much you all like it, listen, and comment. So thank you for doing that. And if you can keep doing it, it's awesome. I do read them all, even the people who copy and paste the word wah 99 times into all of our casts, which I respect.
Going with the same joke. Commitment. 99 wog balloons.
Yep.
What?
Brett had two choices on the song, had the word 99 in it, and he went with Luft balloons, which I think was the right call.
80s for the win.
Additionally, if you like the cast, you want to hear more of us, there's a link on the notes to our YouTube page, the 40K Lorecast. There you'll find old versions of the show that have been converted over with imagery and, more importantly, subtitles, so you can know what we were talking about, along with our live. Yeah, believe me, it's been a few times. Those subtitles are not easy to make. Like, what was Brad saying? I think I got it. Or in the case of me, I think I was saying, who knows? But anyway. We also have links to our live Q&A sessions and now our other two shows, The History of 40K, which is a show also available on Spotify, iTunes, etc., focusing on the history of the tabletop of Warhammer, going through the editions, the rules, etc., and Brad's upcoming show.
You think we got stuff wrong in lore? Wait until we start mixing rules together from 25 years ago.
Yeah, this is, if you guys want to have a fun one, the one that came out, I think, last week. Time of recording, Brad and the Snigs halfway through realized they were talking about the wrong edition. I had to edit it out. You guys won't hear it, but it was about a 10 minute that just had to get cut out of the entire cast because they had the wrong edition.
And it was close.
Snigs goes, hold on, we're off by a decade, and we back and edit it out.
Totally close.
It was fun. Also, Brad's new show coming out, Two Old Men and Their Handler, where actually more of a competitive 40K focus with still quite a bit of lore to it. That's coming out in, you know, sometime in the future.
Yep.
We also have a link to our Patreon in there. Massive thank you to everyone who's contributed already. The Patreon is how we are growing out and expanding further. You guys have helped us out. We've been able to buy new microphones, new headsets. It's why we're able to do YouTube, better editors, all this stuff. That is a massive piece of the Patreon. So thank you. If you join our Patreon, you get this show along with a history of 40K completely ad-free. It's only $4.99 American.
Hold on, everybody. Or, what conversion are you going to give us this week, my friend?
This week, it's going to be 17,927.30 Mongolian Turgax for all of our listeners in Ulaanbaatar, which, by the way, we do have listeners in Ulaanbaatar or people with VPNs. It's one of the two, but I can't see that. And I learned for this cast that Ulaanbaatar is the coldest capital city in the globe with an average January temperature of negative 22 Fahrenheit or negative 30 Celsius for the rest of the world who aren't American.
I'm throwing this out there because John has given me shit multiple times about my nonsensical random facts that I know. And now he keeps hitting me with these.
Yeah, because I watched Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego as a kid, or Santiago. Is it San Diego or San Diego? It's probably Santiago now that I say that. But anyway, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? And it was a good show. And now it's going to be stuck in my head forever. Lastly, as always, we have a link to our Discord. Our Discord is now, it is big. I think we're over 9,500, pushing
9,565.
Yeah, pushing towards 10,000. There's a ton of activity in there, lots of channels. It really is made for people who love 40K in mind. The goal here is not to have it be like a chat forum where you come in there and ask a question, everyone yells at you. Instead, it's a really incredible uplifting community covering everything from the actual game, the tabletop, literature recommendations, even people are able to game with in Space Marine 2 online. Great spot. Massive thank you to all our moderators who've really made it what it is, not just in moderating, but more importantly, they're the ones who designed it. They're the ones who added all the channels, made it so great to navigate through. So huge thank you to them. But with that, let's jump in. So Psychic Awakening. This is an era of 40K known as Psychic Awakening. These were Codex supplements, which a lot of us have some strong opinions on a couple of them, launched between October 2019.
We're going to do more and more on this because I think you mostly too really agree that some of the best lore has been written in the Gathering Storm and Psychic Awakening supplements and in the continued supplements that are coming out for the game. I think that the writers have done a great job of this. So I think it's important to cover.
Absolutely fantastic job. Just the rule writers with some of those books.
Whoa. Back, pump the brakes, big dog. We're not going to talk about the rules during these times.
Well, I'm trying to think, although the Harlequin one was a white dwarf where your Harlequin troop master just became the greatest melee fighter in the galaxy.
Let me just talk about rerollable two up
with that
saves.
Sword.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. With the sword, it was like, oh, what battle round is it? Yeah, I've got 14 attacks now, whatever horrible number it was. Because I know it gained, I think, did it gain a strength and attack for each battle round? Yeah, it was nice. Anyway, yeah, he stayed in the transport till turn three and then decided to just YOLO everybody. But anyway, the Psychic Awakening was a backdrop of the Great Rift splitting the galaxy. And it was really well written because it was, to Brad's point, it was talking about how each faction of the game stepped up to take it, either to take advantage of it or to try and stop the rift expanding.
And the rift would be when Abaddon broke through Cadia and the Eye of Terror expanded and it effectively cut off the galaxy for the most part.
Exactly. And the last book that came out in the series was the Necron book, which is our main focus here. And it focused on the Nephilim subsector and its role in the Indominus Crusade. Now, to Brad's point, what we're discussing here is when the rift happens. So Cadia falls, the Eye of Terror explodes. This giant, you can see, just look up map, look up 40K map, and you'll see it. It's effectively cutting, not necessarily in half, but I would say the upper third of the galaxy. It rips straight across that. As it went through, it created effectively a mini dark age of technology for a lot of the worlds because worlds were totally cut off from them. Except unlike during the dark age of technology where it was like, we can't really communicate and there's raiders. This dark age of technology included giving demons free reign into the materium. You also still have Drukhari who were just like, well, this is fun. It's not a great moment.
Drukhari were not on the side of let's try to stop anything. They were just on the let's take advantage of things.
The reason it's called Psychic Awakening, though, is that with the rift coming into the galaxy, it quadrupled, quintupled, it massively increased the overall psychic powers of people within the galaxy. So everyone, even people who were not force sensitive became force sensitive, and those who were Force Sensitive became astronomically more Force
Sensitive. It was an explosion of power that ripped through the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so for example, the Eldar. The Eldar found themselves more power than ever before, and this is the backdrop for Yanid being born. I would argue probably Yanid doesn't get born without this occurring. And because of this power, though, aside from Yanid, just regular craft world Eldar were much more powerful than before. So they were able to actually fight back. A lot of the craft worlds start doing pretty well during this era because they're overpowered by the psychic forces.
Sans the fact that demons and chaos started showing up everywhere because chaos was used to have to kind of peek out or be summoned or have great things happen. The Rift gave them such a huge staging point of wherever the hell they wanted now.
Yeah, exactly. The best example of it is Ball, where the Tyranids were about to consume Ball. As the Tyranids were closing in on the last pieces of the Blood Angels defending Ball, that's when the Rift ripped through. Kabanda and all of the Bloodletters came flying out of it. Yeah, Kabanda did not, he was not being subtle with this maneuver, came in and ruined a Hive fleet. And there was no summoning ritual. He was just able to do it because the Rift happened to pass nearby. At the same time, I would argue that this is the reason why we see so many of the demon Primarchs now. As we've talked before, it used to be when Angron would die, he would disappear for 10,000 years. Now he's gone for like 8 hours, sometimes even less. If you roll the 3 sixes, it can be a few seconds. And he pops back off. But it's because this Rift has messed with the blend of reality and irreality. The issue, though, is it also is affecting the orcs, who have become extra ornery.
Riled up, irritated.
Yeah, riled up.
Poked with a stick.
Yeah. And even the Tau got a psychic awakening book. They didn't, it was also them and Jean Stiller cult, and they got Shadow Sun back. And the fifth sphere of expansion. I've read the book, obviously. But we're going to probably cover a lot of the psychic awakening in the future. I just want to do a little bit of a backdrop here. The most important part of the psychic awakening, though, is the resurrection of Gilliman. If we're talking the narrative of 40K, that's the biggest one. And Gilliman, at the stage we're here, he's now gotten back to Terra. He's met with the Emperor. He's declared himself the Lord Commander of the Imperium.
Yeah, he's got a special item that he is, because he is definitely lacing up his boots and mighty ass kicking.
Not only is he like him, he also called up the ad mech and told him to make a bunch more because one pair is not going to be enough.
We need this to be standard issue gear.
Yeah, exactly.
Get out there. Mm-hmm. He also organizes, I would argue that he organizes the biggest crusade since the original crusade. The Indominus Crusade might be larger if you're just talking total numbers.
I think it's larger. It's less space marines, obviously, but overall forces, it's larger.
Because he took the entirety of the Imperium and went, I'm giving everybody a purpose because, we're getting invaded from, east, west, south, north, and everything else.
Yeah. And also up and down. That's the thing, too. Yeah, I will say he does have, if you guys listen to the Sisters cast, the luxury of having the Sisters, who seem to outnumber the Space Marines by like 30-1 anyway, and can also wear power armor and shoot bolters. So these were options. But to Brad's point, the Indominus Crusade launches itself out of Segmentum Solar. And the idea was to first halt the advance of all the enemies of mankind and then start reclaiming the worlds that were kind of in systems that were lost, mostly just the ineffectiveness and follies of the Lords of Terra, who are once again not important because Gilliman is here. It's a good thing. Gilliman's here. And so it's the Lords of Terra have now moved back to being more what they were when the Emperor was around. Yeah, you're there. But Gilliman will come back and slap you with a power fist, which means you will actually cease to exist. It's like one of those weapons in the game Quake. The person just explodes.
And you're gone.
Yeah. So the first thing Gilliman does is he divides his fleet into three things, Primus, Secundus, and Tertius. And he sends them all out each to perform like a host of tasks. They all had a list of things they were going to do. But it's not long before they find themselves getting reassigned by Gilliman to new things that he discovers. And we're going to talk about one of those, right meow. Nephilim Sector. So Nephilim Sector is out in the bottom right part of the galaxy. As the galaxy is burning, and I do mean burning, there are calls coming in from everywhere. The Astropath Choir on Sol was becoming overwhelmed with requests for aid. And actually, astropaths themselves were dying.
Killing astropaths because they were getting so much connection.
Yeah, yeah. Or receiving, because there's always stories of astropaths dying trying to send a message because they have to get through the warp. It's so hard to do. These ones had so much overload. It was like a computer that overheated. But it was noted at some point, actually fairly quickly, that there was one sector that wasn't crying out at all. But more importantly, it wasn't even communicating. It's the Nephilim sector.
Which is a big deal because it is home to a lot of giant hive worlds.
Yeah. This is kind of like if you played Mass Effect 3 with Sanctuary, where it was just too quiet. Something's off.
Yeah.
So all around the Nephilim sector, though, the systems are burning like the rest of the galaxy. If these worlds had fallen to chaos, to orcs, or the like, even Tyranids, there would have been a distress call coming out. Nothing came out of it.
There have been multiple distress calls, and we got nothing.
Yeah.
No matter what, exactly. There still would have been automated distress calls, the initial when they make contact distress calls, other worlds coming out, but they got nothing.
So the Imperium sends a battle group to go handle the situation because they knew this is off, but they also knew that whatever's there is probably not a good thing. So they sent a full battle group out there. All around the Nephilim sector, though, and this is important, the worlds were burning with the rest of the galaxy, maybe actually a little bit more than they should, because for an area that's not in direct touch of the rift, it was almost too hot to be a hot zone, because it sits a little bit below and to the right of the main part of the rift. But upon arriving in the system, as they found the Imperial worlds were either in full revolt or under full assault from Xenos, but not named Xenos. When I say Xenos, I don't mean Orcs or Eldar or Drukhari, the great numerous extra Xenos in the galaxy. And it's because these revolts, these invasions, were much more akin to the attacks of the Krones at Artemanta that we covered at the start of the War of the Beast, because the Xenos that were attacking the Nephilim sector were just trying to get through and out the other side,
behind them. There's something in the rear window that was scarier than going through Imperium defenses.
Yeah, and it was the same with the Imperial rebellions. The Imperial rebellions were not some ambitious planetary governor or general trying to seize control of a planet. It wasn't chaos cultists or genius or patriarchs trying to seize the planet. It was people rebelling to try and seize the ships to get off planet. And we'll do more on this widespread rebellion a little bit later in the heresy. But this had drawn the attention of the Sisters of Battle.
Which is somebody that you don't want to get the attention of when you're in rebellion.
Yeah. And so the order, our Martyred Lady order showed up, and we're getting more to them in a minute. But for now, I'm going to focus just on a battle group and their experience. So upon arriving in the sector, this battle group, which is called Calades, found something kind of awful. Upon arrival, they found it easy to get there. Never a good sign. Because with the opening of the Great Rift, this is also called, by the way, the Circadix Maledictum, the warp is a nightmare throughout the galaxy. Warp travels insanely turbulent. It's like flying a plane over a thunderstorm.
And entire sectors were cut off. This is almost right before the birth of Slaanesh, when you had just crazy roiling in the warp.
Yep. Yeah, and the stories that are coming out of this is that when a fleet would try and translate out of the warp back into reality, upwards of 10% just wouldn't make it out the other side. And they were doing short jumps. But however, this battle group, when they get to the edge of the Nephilim sector, they found the calmest warp basically in human history. Or sorry, recorded human history, because you know there might have been some nicer bits earlier. It was a flat ocean. But there's a catch. And the catch is, while the warp is calm, it's because it was no longer there.
Well, the astropath and the psychers were not super excited to be cut off from the warp.
Yeah, they were literally screaming and some of them dying, not because they were being attacked by the warp, but because they couldn't see it or communicate in it. There are stories of psychers falling to the ground and choking to death as if they were drowning. And they literally died, not a like, you know.
This isn't even just a thing for the psychers, though, because they couldn't translate in. Warp engines would just fail and just not be able to go or interact with the warp at all.
Yeah, you would actually try to translate into the warp and just everything would fire up and it wouldn't work. One of my favorite stories was one of them actually did do that. They were able to translate into the warp. And as they went into the warp, their Geller field overloaded and they just looked at it and they were started looking around waiting for the demons to come murder them all. And they just traveled through the warp with no problems. and then came out the other side. And yeah, that must have been a fun moment. So the group master of the fleet, Calades, was this old rugged veteran named Marin. And he just looks around, sees all of this, and goes, yeah, this is not natural. I'm going to go find the disturbance and I'm going to destroy it.
I was just saying, in pure Imperium form, what's causing this? Let's not try to figure out what's making the warp calm. It's not natural. Let's blow it up for sure. That is 100% prime Imperium there.
But what gets crazy about this story, this is a really well-written book, guys. This is fun. As they get further in, they discover endless abandoned planets. But when I say abandoned, I mean, we're talking more like day the Earth stood still. Like, actually, no, not that one.
It was just, there's
no, because that one, people are still around. Yeah. There's nobody there. LV-428.
Go to Mass Effect again.
Yeah.
Wait, when the collectors pick everybody up, the structures were still there. They're just now, everybody's gone.
Everything's fine. So, as the battle group arrives in the system, blocking their mind, that wasn't true
that they didn't find anything. They found a wall that blocked them off from even seeing anything.
They couldn't get through. Exactly. And so once they made it to the first space stations, they found them abandoned. Not a single human there. There were servitors, but they were just standing around in a permanent rest mode. There was food on the tables that obviously it was rotting away at this time, but there's no signs of a struggle, no signs of a fight, but they did notice all the spacecraft were missing. So the conclusion was everyone just left. So then, of course, they go planet side. And when you get planet side, a lot of the same stuff. These are hive worlds, maybe not Necromunda hive world, but these are still hive worlds. And there's no one there. And some of the stories I love is like the machinery, because the machine spirits are still going, is still functioning. There are airplanes that were flying around in the sky. Still just flying around forever. Because again, we don't use fuel, guys. These are endless fuel cells. The creepier ones was they would find on the ground crashed vehicles, as if the pilot just stopped caring and just drove into a wall. They all turned off. Right after this, though, it doesn't take long. They notice that the people who've gone down to the planet, they don't feel right.
I mean, whoa. Yeah. I don't feel right. These guys were just losing their mind with an overwhelming sense of just something's on me, anxiety, paranoia. I can't stop moving. I can't rest. I can't sleep. I can't do anything. They wouldn't eat. They wouldn't do anything, but they weren't accomplishing anything either. So they were just spazzing out is the medical term.
Yeah. And so this is called the stilling, and it started as an overwhelming sense of anxiety and paranoia. The soldiers, they just couldn't settle down. They couldn't just get rest. They couldn't sleep. It just, something was wrong. And then, but over time it gets worse. So a lot of them just started wandering off, just not so much like a zombie wandering, but just like, hey, I don't like being here. I'm leaving. Abandoning posts, doing whatever they can. Others would just sit down and say, I'm not getting up. I'm not doing anything. Leave me alone. And the longer they were on the planet, the worse it got. This became a huge issue because commissars are a thing, and commissars don't ask you to do stuff twice. So the commissars,
they do. I mean, the second time they ask is followed by a bolt pistol in the back of your head. But
I don't think they ask the second time. I think there are commissars who were present here who had Karn level kill counts on Imperial soldiers. This is insane. But even the commissars began struggling, so they began committing suicide. Because they find a weakness in themselves. So the Imperium starts losing a battle to occupy an empty world that has no enemy combatants. Not great. Now, luckily, any good battle group has an Inquisitor. And they had a woman named Draxus.
Draxus is awesome, by the way.
Yeah. She's the one. She's a playable model, by the way. She's the one with a weird dragon on her arm.
She's really good, too. You find her in Custode's armies all the time.
Her rules are meh, but I can see how it'd be helpful in Custodes, though. I was like,
4-up devs versus infantry. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's helpful. That's all I'm saying. But
18-inch loadout.
Yeah. Interesting. Unlike her rules, she's an incredibly powerful psyker. She's not in the data center, I'll be honest. So what she was able to sense was that the world had been severed from the warp. And it wasn't that the warp was a calm ocean here, but rather the warp was being trapped behind a wall and couldn't get to the planet. what Drax has found was even more concerning, was that she couldn't find any reason why. Because as we said earlier, there's no signs of struggle. There's no battle.
Yeah. But even more whack is, hey, let's go look at the security cameras. And all of them were corrupted with no information.
Yeah, there's no data, nothing anywhere. They can't find anything. And this couldn't happen by accident. Luckily, Draxus is part of Ordo Xenos. So she knew there was something alien going on here. And she didn't really know how the Necrons were doing it, but she was pretty sure it was the Necrons. And yeah, so we'll go ahead and jump to the beginning. It's obviously the Necrons, guys. I'm not writing you a novel. It's, we all know
it's, what this is about. This is also a titled Necron episode, so.
Yeah. As the battle group presses forward into the sector to find the cause, this disturbance gets worse and worse and worse, to the point where space marines started struggling against this. The spaceships themselves, it was permeating even into them. So soon, the number of sanctioned psychers, astropaths, and navigators began to deplete because they started just dying and killing themselves. So much so that the commander, Marin, had to assign bodyguards to each and every psyker in the fleet to stop them from killing themselves. But they eventually enter a system called Xedos. And in Xedos, they get this really strange readout from one of the planets called Mesmok. And this battle group has a vanguard in of Ultramarines. They deploy down to the planet to survey the situation. And I'm going to be honest. All right, this is what it says in the book, guys. It says they deployed down to the planet to survey the situation.
Which, you know what? I took offense to this because they're surveying the situation. There's a giant pylon bigger than the Pentagon.
Yeah, that's my point. They say they surveyed it and they found it. They found something that was 2 miles or so wide, so 3.5 kilometers, and 10 miles high, so 16 kilometers up. And they had to land on the planet
to look for it. Yes. Instead of just going, oh, it's right there.
Also made entirely out of Blackstone.
Which also gives bananas energy off of anything. Yeah. You're just like, yeah, we found it. By what? Looking down? You didn't need a survey party to go down. It's right there. I can see it. I can see it from orbit.
Yeah. Needless to say, the Imperium was like, that's probably the issue. And so Commander Marin orders the attack. So he decides we're going to destroy the pylon and we're going to hunt down every other pylon and destroy them. So he puts the call in all the to have all the ships in the fleet arrive and they would then destroy the pylon. However, Illuminator Scissoras had a different opinion of what they should be doing
here. If someone in Discord could give me the Jordan meme with Zaris, and I took offense to that.
Yes. So let's talk more about what this pylon network is. So the pylon that Marin found was one of hundreds, maybe thousands in the system. It's a project by the Silent King and Illuminator. I'm going to go with Scissoras. It is not hard. It is not easy to pronounce Necron stuff, guys. I apologize. It's a lot of silent letters.
I'm rocking with Zaris.
Loud letters. Zaris. So the goal of the Silent King and Illuminator Scissoras is to shut down the warp in the region. And this is because the Silent King had a problem. Actually, he had
a lot of problems.
But one was bigger than the rest. The Tyranids were upon the galaxy, and there are more on their way. The Necrons are not awakening as planned. Yes, many Tomb Worlds were lost to planetary destruction. Others were lost to other Necrons.
Infighting is a big deal, as we said in the last cast.
Yeah. Yeah, the Necrons have no stance right now. In the current amount of Necrons versus the current amount of Tyranids in the galaxy, Necrons lose this automatically. And the Silent King needed the species of the galaxy to fight the Tyranids while he musters his forces from their deep slumber. But every time that they fight the Tyranids win. It then feeds the Tyranids because each world is full of biomass. So he needs to figure out a way to kind of bolster his forces. Look, good news for him. Around this time, Gilliman also realizes the Tyranid thing and starts exterminating worlds to starve the Tyranids.
Yeah, so he starts doing a lot of worlds.
Yeah, but that's a very recent thing. The Tyranids have been doing quite well up until this point. The biggest problem, though, for the Silent King is just how active the warp is in the galaxy. This is causing even greater strife. So it makes it so the human worlds are easier for the Tyranids to conquer. If the Imperial world was just fighting the Tyranids, they could probably hold out or at least leave more of a Pyrrhic victory where they could just destroy the planet on the way out. But the problem is the Tyranids are hitting worlds where strife and challenges had already appeared. So the chaos has already gotten in there. And a lot of times these Imperial worlds are fighting multi-front wars against chaos and Tyranids.
Yeah, Tyranids, orcs, people, anybody. Yep. Dark Elder has been raiding you. There's so many other things going on here.
The Silent King needed to do something to stop the warp. And good news, he has a very long hatred for the warp and the technology to do something about it.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit legally.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
He grabs Scissorus and he sets into motion this plan. Quick note on Scissorus, because he's one of my favorite Necron characters. He's a cryptech within the Necrons, and the cryptechs are scientists, for lack of a better phrase. They're responsible for all the technologies, all the advances, as well as like foreseeing the future.
But also, the repair. They also do on site repairs and stuff like that.
Forgot about that. Yep. Yeah. They're cryptechs. I don't love them in the new Necrons, but in 8th edition, cryptechs were fun to have in your army.
He's also a badass. Yeah. He's a giant walker.
Scissorus is super cool because Scissorus is also the person who oversaw the creation of the Necrodermis that became the Necrons. The biotransference obviously was a C-Tan thing, but Scissorus was also part of that. He's the most powerful cryptech in all of the Necrons, and so the Silent King grabbing him probably helped.
Yeah. Get the guy that's in charge of every advancement that they had at the time.
Yeah, and they've ever had. So the pylon network within the Nephilim sector is both vast and complicated, and this is created by Scissorus and the Silent King. Because pylons don't work by just placing one somewhere and then another one equidistant, like cell phone towers do, where they can bounce signal. This is more complicated because you're actually trying to, the way I look at it is that the warp is more like it's an amorphous blob. So just putting up a wall around it, they'll still find a way through. So you have to kind of shape it and move it, do all this stuff.
Quite a bit because of the fact that while the Necrons don't access the warp, they know and understand the warp by mathematics, and they're going to shut it down by tech. I love this part about everything that they're doing, and they're talking about. They're predicting the expansion and decline of the warp by using their own technology. I think that's wild.
Because they learned it during the war in heaven. Yeah, and so each world throughout their network could have one or many pylons. Some of them are massive, miles high. Again, 1.6 is your conversion for kilometers, guys, because America's cool. We're going to do 1.6. Yeah. But in other places, they'd have a cluster of smaller pylons arranged in a certain pattern. But the overall effect is the same. It's a Faraday cage for the warp and built throughout a system. And then the larger the network is, the more the control. What it does in the positive is it severs the connection from the immaterium to the materium. So this is just a void for all things warp sensitive in the area, as well as making the area completely inaccessible to the warp.
If the Necrons weren't such terrible people, this is actually a really good idea, even for the Imperium.
This has potential, and we're going to get into that more later with Call when we talk. It'll be more the next episode where Call discovers this network and goes, but can I have it?
Right, exactly. He's like, I know we're fighting against this, guys, but like, he's not wrong. This is
can I just keep some of it? Not all of it, but just I'm keeping a piece. Yeah, the Silent King's plan is first to control a sector this way and then begin to spread it across the galaxy. Because he was not just severing the warp he was trying to do. He was trying to use these sectors of no warp to also muster his own forces.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Really, they're still trying to conquer the galaxy. But the Necrons, and they talk about this a lot in the actual supplement books, where the Necrons are fully confident that they're just going to shut the rift off. They're not going to.
Yeah.
It's not like we're limiting the rift. They were going to close it, period. And they were
confident. There's been a few other people in the Psychic Awakenings who had a similar plan. The Necrons are the only one that was actually working. The rest of them were like, we'll do all these rituals and this stuff. And Necrons like, yeah, we're just going to put a cage around it and then shove it into a corner.
You're like,
not care anymore.
You guys are dancing around with sticks and chicken blood, and we're going to actually put some tech up here.
look, no warp. And the reason this was happening in the Nephilim sector is this was actually an era that had a lot of non-awakened tomb worlds. So what the Silent King was doing was he was building this up so that he could awaken tomb worlds in this section unmolested by chaos and other forces. Because what he didn't want to have happen was have the Necrons come up, fight the Tyranids, defeat the Tyranids, but then be too weak to conquer the rest of the galaxy, like what happened with the Cetan. When they did defeat the Cetan, but the Eldar and Kork were just too powerful and they had to go hide. So this time, his plan was, I'm making sure I've got all my forces and probably going to go a little bit slower. We're going to start in this section and we're going to expand out and begin conquering. There was a flaw in his plan, though. And the flaw in his plan is simply the Necrons are not warp sensitive. So they don't understand what cutting things that are warp sensitive off from the warp does.
Whoa, John. Let's talk about what's been the thorn in the Silent King's side the entire time, which is he doesn't get the Imperium. Like all of his tech and everything else, he figures out all of the other races, and then the Imperium keeps doing, you guys are doing well in spite of yourselves. I don't understand it.
What he really couldn't foresee was the amount of aggression the Imperium would show towards what he was doing. Because my assumption is from the Sun King's perspective, hey, I'm shutting the warp off, so no more demons. Everyone's cool with that, right? And unfortunately, the side effect was pretty significant. As I say to Brad with a pile of medication behind him. What do you think of side effects, Brad?
they are real and not great.
Yeah. So as the reports start coming back to the Imperium about the Nephilim sector, it's immediate interest, the Admech, and we're going to do a deep dive later in the cast into some of the stuff with the Admech and the Necrons. It is quite funny. But the Calades battle fleet, as always, is traveling with a full complement of Admech. And they were there to harness what was left of the technology, as well as to aid in the divination of whatever was going on in the area that involved technology, and send all the reports back to Mars. That's the key part right there. The Mechanicum had been studying black zone pylons around the galaxy forever. They never could fully understand the technology because it was both too advanced as well as too alien for them, but also it was too old. All of the pylons the Admech had found were built 60-something million years ago. They knew what Blackstone was, which the Imperium, by the way, calls Noctolith, whatever.
Which is a big deal. They don't understand it at all, though, because they're using it as a nullifier, or at least the Necrons in this thing, but it's also a wild synergistic amplifier of the warp.
Yep.
Also.
Yeah, the only thing they did know is that extended exposure to Blackstone has bad effects on organic life.
Bad?
The thing was, but let's get into this. Everything that they'd encountered had been around for 60 million years. It was kind of low energy stuff. So they were aware that it would slowly, in effect, lobotomize beings that were around it because it would eat your soul. But it was slow. For people like on Cadia, which obviously had these, their lifespans was shorter than the time it would take to lobotomize them. But when the Admech get to Nephilim, these things are, this is happening in hours, weeks at most. It is fast. And it's because the difference is that of a 65 or 60 million year old pylon that's on low energy output, this one's at full power.
With new batteries.
And they are just watching this thing happen. And the Admech are mildly interested, to say the least, in this. However, the stilling also has a big problem on how the materium actually functions and interacts with the immaterium. And I'm about to cover some stuff, guys, that was in the Silent King novel. I'm not going to spoil the whole novel for you, but some of the stuff is in that. These are massive reveals. Deal with it. GW in those books admits that all humans, all beings have a soul. The soul that you have sits effectively in the immaterium and is an energy output of what you do in the materium. And this is how the warp gets affected by actions in the mortal realm. This explains why beings like humanity and beings like the Eldar are able to affect the warp so much more with their actions than like the Necron Tyr did back when they were growing around. The more it disturbs it, the more it goes there. But it also works the opposite direction. So if a soul is inclined, the warp, it can affect it back through. Like we've discussed before, when Khorne has a champion, he will provide blessings. And that's how he can reach through the warp into the materia and make someone better. Tzeentch probably did the same thing, where he would give some knowledge or some insight into someone that it wanted to affect. If the mortal vessel then becomes so inclined.
Well, it's also the more that you interact with the warp, the more that the warp interacts with you, and the strengthening of that bond, though. So you change things in reality, and you mirror in the mirror world, which would be the immaterium, you affect it in there, but you strengthen that connection through just your actions. And if you sever that connection, you are a husk of yourself. You're a soulless husk because you've lost your connection to yourself.
Yeah. In the case of like psychers, this connection is obviously a lot stronger, but it affects everybody. And where this matters is with the pylons in place and the network active, the mortal being no longer has connection to its own soul. And this is why these people were just freaking out so much. You've now taken away emotion, both good and bad. And I think it's a really good explanation of what it's like being around a blank, because we've heard for decades now about in GW lore, if you're around a blank, you're just uncomfortable, you don't feel well. This explains it. It's because you're being severed from your actual soul and your feelings. So joy, fear, sorrow, ecstasy, they're all fleeting. You get them for a moment, but it's those emotions sit more in your soul, which is in the immaterium. So you never get to really feel a fullness of life.
Let's go on the next.
Which is why you'd hunt them down as heretics. Yeah.
Well, let's go on the next one then. Did the Necrons never have souls then, even when they were Necron Tyr?
That's what it's really
they allude to that, though.
Right. Yeah, but then what do the Seatan eat? That's the problem. Yeah, it is because, but the Seatan had no access to the warp either. So maybe the Necron Tyr had a different version, and it would make sense because there's other species in the galaxy. The Tau are not force sensitive,
right.
So maybe there's some energy level or just different beings or different things. Who knows? But that's how it's written. So what happens for humanity? Eldar, by the way, also get exposed to this, which they are not huge fans of. But as a being, you don't know what's wrong with you. You just know something's wrong and you don't like it. Effectively, one of two things happens. You either freak out and try to leave, or you just give up on life. The ones who try to freak out and leave, that's great. But a lot of others, this is what's happening with the commissars having to kill everybody. People just sit down and they wouldn't eat. They wouldn't drink. They wouldn't move. They just died. Right then and there. This, by the way, total surprise of the Necrons. Had no idea this was going to happen.
Yep.
This falls into the category of oopsie.
Well, remember, they also think that they are going to get the Imperium before they start attacking them on their side by doing
it. This is awesome, guys. I mean, that's why I love it. This is that thing of a dog or a cat bringing you a dead bird. They're so proud of themselves. Check out this thing I did. We should eat this dead bird together because we're best friends. And the Imperium just went very quickly, bad dog, and got a rolled up newspaper. I will say the Imperium may want to hit him with a rolled up newspaper. The Mechanicum were behind the person hitting him with a rolled up newspaper saying, I'd like to eat some of that bird.
where did you get that bird from?
Yeah. Are there more birds over there? So I want to spend some time now on Admech and the Necrons. And again, this is really more fresh out of the latest books, but it actually, I went back and checked the old codexes after learning this, and it does hold up.
Necrons showed up. That's the crazy part. Even though they've been in the game forever, in the actual
lore
of when they showed up, it's like yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the Necron's first contact with mankind was 897 of M41. We're at 999 right now. Maybe a little bit past. We're less than, we're like, what, 103, 110 years of Necrons being around. However, their first interaction dates back at least 10,000 years.
During the Crusades.
Yeah. And this is because the Mechanicum had discovered them and kept it a secret. They had discovered these tomb worlds. To most, to a casual observer, the thing about a tomb world is that when the Necrons would teleport down below surface, it wasn't everything. It was just all the bits that mattered. But there were like old, mostly pyramids, that were 60 million years old that did have some leftover tech. They looked to the casual observer like a mountain or a giant landmass, but the ADMEC exploratory fleets were finding them. And thanks to excavation, chats with the Eldar, maybe even some random interactions with awakened Necrons. Cough, cough. What's sitting on Mars? The Void Dragon on Mars. Yeah. Cough, cough. Possibly the entire origin of the machine spirit. Cough, cough. Anyway, the Mechanicum are highly interested in this race.
They are motivated on this.
Yes. Yeah. So for the last 10,000 years or so, the Mechanicum have been plundering Necron tomb worlds for all sorts of technology. And they started off plundering all the stuff above ground, but over time discovered that there were actually stuff below ground. And this changed a lot of their stuff because, much like Trays in the Infinite, if they could open these tomb worlds and loot the sleeping catacombs, they could get everything there. But what the Mechanicum were doing is they were then bringing in Melta bombs afterwards to blow up all the evidence. So that way the Imperium couldn't find out what they've been up to.
Well, this did come back to bite them several times, though, because as they're stealing things, the actual tomb world defenses would start activating.
Yeah. Early bits, this weren't bad. It was wraiths, scarabs, and spiders. So the first few ADMEC got their butts kicked pretty bad by those things, but then later they're like, oh, yeah, hey, bring guns.
Yeah.
It's also important. Bring the pickaxe, but also bring guns. But at some point during M41, the worlds start becoming an issue. Because up until like 700 of M41, the reawakening process hadn't been triggered in mass. Now, all of a sudden, it's going. So stop me if you've seen the sci-fi film before where the tomb awakens and comes fully online before you finish your plundering. This might come up. So all of a sudden, power supplies, phasing technology, weaponry, and more. These are now accessible because the tomb world's powering online, but so are the defenders. So the ADMEC have to start looting these worlds faster and faster and faster. And what happens is kind of funny. The ADMEC realize effectively like the timer, any good heist movie.
I was going to say, but I love it because of the fact that they always react this amount, this time, they do this. And they get wildly overconfident because they just start sending people out to get this. They go, all you have to do is wait 10 seconds. The camera moves here. You duck under here and you do this.
Yeah. There's a scene in The Silent King where they talk about this, where a bunch of Necron warriors are behind an impenetrable force field. And so they know if they hit the force field a certain way, they become a threat. And the warriors will march out. They just slaughter the warriors. This is how they've been doing stuff. And this was great. Any of us who played video games in the 90s, this is how you beat every boss. You go back, you go forward, you hit him once, you go back, you go to the right, you go forward, you hit him once. It would just in repeat, and you would win every single time. Unless the Lord awakened. And this became the bigger problem for the ADMEC, because for a while in the early stages, they were able to just kind of wreck the tomb worlds. And by the time the Lord had awakened, all the forces were destroyed. The ADMEC could loot the place and blow it up. But communication happens, other tomb worlds are awakening that they're not aware of. And suddenly in the middle of the awakening process, the tomb world makes an adjustment and turns the Lord online, or worse yet, the Overlord online. Now, all those useless thralls have a genius at the helm.
I love everything about the fact that they originally classified the Necrons as a low tier Xeno species that wasn't a big deal.
Because the Necrons were, and this was also a mistake ADMEC made, as the Necrons were discovered, it's a great point Brad's making, the Necrons were classified as a tier 3 Xeno, which means local threat, nothing beyond that. So effectively, don't go to an active Necron world and you're fine. And they did this because the Mechanicum didn't want the Inquisition or the Lords of Terra to launch an attack on the Necrons because they needed to pillage more technology. But enough Tomb Worlds came online and the days of looting the catacombs became kind of the inverted. It became the days of the Admech getting their butts kicked by the Necrons.
Pretty badly, by the way.
Oh, absolutely wrecked. Admech exploratory fleets just kept pushing their luck on these Tomb Worlds, taking too long to break into vaults or spending too much time looting, and the alarm had been raised and they would have total losses, no way of escaping. Because when the Necrons show up, by the way, they don't show up slowly.
Yes. The better part was is the Admech started to show up and there would be fully operational Death Stars in orbit out in systems ready to go. And you're like, hey, we're going to sneak in and take all this stuff. And they're like, yeah, we're going to destroy your entire fleet right now.
Yeah. And so this starts really with the Silent King coming back in 744, but it's more when he ascends to control of the Necrons. That's in 900 of M41. That's when the full Necron Awakening really takes off, because now it starts happening quickly. Now Tomb Worlds are turning on in what used to be, I don't know, let's say it was 10 hours before. Now it's 10 minutes. They've just come online. But more importantly, other Necrons are showing up. And again, this is in some of the novels where the Admech are on the planet, engaging, working through it, and all of a sudden, all the alarms go off on the ship because there's an entire Necron fleet in orbit. Because remember, the Necrons have phase-shifting technology. So they can appear in mass. And so, you know, you're having a grand old time shooting mindless... You're fighting mindless warriors easily, and all of a sudden, an overlord and a catacomb command barge comes down with a bunch of not mindless ones, right? Still mindless, but under his control.
So they go from doing Lara Croft tomb raiding and stealing stuff. So they're starting off with stealing, and then they're waging a war in secret, of course, because they still want to steal all this stuff. And then they graduate to... Holy God, getting wrecked by the Necron, because Necron entire dynasties are showing up overhead going, yeah, quit stealing our shit, to having to never before seen tail between your legs, having to tell Gilliman about what they've been doing, because it's a real big problem, because the Necrons took huge offense to what they were doing and were following them back to wreck other Imperium worlds.
And it's a really cool scene in the book, by the way, guys, where Gilliman literally makes the head of the Admech apologize to the Imperium, in effect, and tell them all the truth. Who, by the way, did not know he was going to make her do that. It was a good scene. But on that note, let's get to Gilliman, because he's the last thing we need to cover before we jump into the Pariah Crusade. At this stage in Imperial history, there had been conflicts with the Necrons, but they've been scattered. In addition, most of the conflicts with the Necrons were against individual Tomb Worlds that were nowhere near full strength. Well, let's caveat that a little bit. All of the recorded interactions with the Necrons were with non-fully awakened Tomb Worlds. Even the battles they lost. The fully awakened Tomb World, it was kind of like hitting the Eldar during
the fall.
Dark Age of Technology. The fall. Where they would just get near and the Eldar would go, yeah, just delete all of that from orbit. I don't care about it. So we don't know how many times Necrons wiped out an exploratory fleet, but it's more than zero. Now, the only group that has deep knowledge of the Necrons is the Admech. And for the last 20 to 50 years, the Admech had to come to terms with the fact that they were losing a war against the Necrons. And the bigger problem that the Admech have to go to Gilliman with is not the, hey, we picked a fight we can't win. Can you help us out? Which is how it started. It's actually, we picked a fight with what might be the greatest foe in the entire galaxy. And we don't just need your help pulling our asses out of this fire. But if we don't do something about them, they're going to kill everything in the entire galaxy. Yeah. So all of a sudden, this Necron conflict goes from a small little area to a full-blown galactic war. And it's because the Admech pop up the map to Gilliman and just, and because Gilliman says, well, where are these Necrons? Because I've heard of them. I've read all the data on them. How bad can it be? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
The answer was check all. Oh, yeah. A bunch of those tomb worlds were heavily populated Imperial worlds.
Yeah, because the thing was that AdMech had looted these worlds of technology 10,000, 5,000 years ago. And the Imperium sent settlers there and built stuff on there. This is all LV-428, basically. they discovered the entire galaxy is LV-428. So this is kind of a nightmare because the Necron forces are now spinning up, much like what we saw in War of the Beast, where these small orc conflicts went from, hey, there's a lot of orcs here, to, hey, there's a lot of orcs here, to, oh my God, there's way too many orcs here. Someone do something about this. So the Mechanicum go to Gilliman and say, please help. Luckily, they had Call. And Call is the progenerator.
You really blow this over, though. G-Man was banana pants angry about this.
He was, but the good news for them is that they had Call do it. And Call is the reason G-Man's alive.
True.
So there's a little bit of this there. But the bigger piece, though, is actually G-Man trusts Call, and he knows Call will tell him the truth. So Call comes in with the full truth about how massive this is, how many Necron tomb worlds are literally on key Imperial worlds, and that this conflict with the Necrons is completely unavoidable, and the conflict will be on scale or on par with what he's currently doing against the Tyranids. Because remember, the whole thing of the Indominus Crusade, one of the main pieces of it was the Tyranids. Gilliman got back to Terra, looked up, and discovered there was a Hive fleet beelining towards Terra itself. So the first thing he was doing with the Primus, Secundus, and Terminus fleets were to control some of chaos of it, but a lot of it was to push the Tyranids back. And now he's just told, oh yeah, the Tyranids are actually number two. These guys are our number one threat. So Gilliman looks at all, because he is the greatest military mind of this era. Just, I'm not wrong, because the lion's not awake yet, and I still think Gilliman's better. Personally, I think Gilliman's better. That's for a debate for a different day. Gilliman calls Fleet Primaris, Secundus, and Tertius to join him in an all-out assault in the Nephilim sector, because he realizes the amount of effort the Necrons are putting in the Nephilim sector means this sector is important to the Necrons. So if he can get there and demolish it, he can at least backfoot them for a little bit and then move his forces elsewhere. The goal for Gilliman really at this point is Whack-A-Mole Galaxy. He needs to get everything in the entire galaxy a bit more stable so he can start picking some fights and taking some key players out. Unfortunately for Gilliman, he has no idea of the size and scope of what's about to come into play in the Pariah Crusade. So with that, we'll break. Because next week, we're going to kind of just do a linear run through the Pariah Crusade, which when the Imperium breaks into the system, takes some pretty serious losses, discover that the Sisters of Battle are pretty badass at this thing. Spoiler alert, the Faraday cages don't affect your faith in the God Emperor. That comes from somewhere else. So once again, the Sisters of Battle, best fighting force in the entire Imperial galaxy. And I say that as someone who doesn't play Sisters. But anyway.
They're awesome in the video game, by the way.
Oh, they're exceptional. So this is a Necron force that's never been recorded before. A lot of just a little side note for everybody. The Necron codexes started in third edition. And they added a few models here and there until we got to about 8th edition, in which I would assume they had less than 25 data sheets in 8th edition. The start of 9th edition, which was the launch of this crusade, they got quite a lot new stuff. And it was timed up very well from a plot standpoint that, oh yeah, this stuff had always been there, but those tomb worlds hadn't fully awakened yet. But now the Imperium is hitting a Necron forest that literally has stuff even the AdMech didn't know that they had.
The vaults and things of that nature coming out. Because it's all the things that they have the shards contained in. So they have their most powerful stuff. Wasn't going to be just wandering out.
Yeah. Destroyers, the Hexmark destroyers come into this. The weird tall thing with the long legs and the eye, whatever that's called. I like Necrons.
The War of the Worlds. There you go.
I like Necrons, but I actually like the older Necrons. I like gray-tied Necrons. Like, what if I run 80 warriors at you? Well, I'll shoot them. They come back to life. Sometimes. This has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you all next week.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.